Hi, everybody. My name is Diane Johnson. I am with the Black Caucus of Healthcare Workers. I'm actually the scientific program planner. And we actually have about 2 minutes before we get started, so I'm just going to do a little bit of housekeeping. This way, if there are people coming from lunch, they have an opportunity to come in. I want to give you a little bit of information about the Black Caucus. We are the oldest and the first caucus for the American Public Health Association. Hi, ladies. Have a seat. Welcome, welcome. You're not late. Don't worry about it. And we are actually celebrating our 40th year this year. Yay us.
Yay!
And basically, our mission and our goal is to help promote healthcare issues that are pertaining to people of the African diaspora. Within that, as a membership organization of the American Public Health Association, we help write policy, we worked to do mentorship. We obviously put on the scientific program for an opportunity for new and seasoned presenters to share their information. We have networking opportunities. We have business meetings. So if anyone is not a member, I would encourage you to become a member, as well as being a member of APHA. Within that, please visit our booth, which is 2219 in the expo. Just to give you a little bit of information about what we've got going on this year, we've got about 25 different sessions. We've had quite a few of them today, so be sure to check your book. If you go to our booth, we'll actually have a little brochure for you for all of the sessions that we have ongoing throughout the next couple of days. We do an annual Hildreth A. Poindexter Awards dinner. Last year, our award recipient was Dr. Satcher. This year, our award recipient is Dr. Georges Benjamin, who, as you all should know, is our current executive director. And it's going to be a really great celebration. So if anybody would like to attend, there are tickets available at on-site registration. It's $77, and the dinner is tomorrow night. We do a biannual pre-conference symposium, usually the Saturday. So this year we had one. Next year we won't. In Denver we will. Woohoo, go skiing. And that's just some quick information about who we are and what we do. I will take a moment to ask everybody to take out your BlackBerry, your cell phone, your Trio, whatever little beepy, buzzy, clingy, dingy, whatever type of apparatus you might have. Turn it off or to silent, preferably off. It's very distracting to our presenters. And if there aren't any questions, I'll run up my 2 minutes and I'll go ahead and start introducing our first presenter. So, this session is actually focusing on women's health, and Still I Rise is the title, taken obviously from Maya Angelou's poem. And our first presenter is Eleanor Long, who's a health education coordinator. She's with the Los Angeles County Department of Health of Public Health, and she received her master's in public health from the University of Alabama in Birmingham. And I'll let her give herself a little bit more of an introduction and to introduce her topic for us. So thank you very much.
Good afternoon. Thank you for being here. It's a gorgeous day. It'd be tempting to be out. I want to talk to you just briefly about what I've been doing in Los Angeles County to address the obesity epidemic. And, of course, raise your hand if you successfully address the obesity. Yeah, right. Okay. So I have no financial relationships to disclose. Kind of wish I did. I'm part of a national learning collaborative. CDC, AmChip, and CityMatch put together a project entitled Healthy Weight for Women of Reproductive Age. It's because of birth outcomes and the fact that obesity is a risk factor for birth outcomes. So in Los Angeles, we looked at the data, which is what we do in public health, right? And guess who needed the most help as far as interventions for obesity? It would be African Americans and Latinas, of course. And you know all the statistics as well as I do. And what I think is interesting about this slide is how closely the rise in obesity is mirrored by the rises in diabetes. Look at those different color lines with the African Americans in green on the top of both of the charts, followed underneath by the Latinas on both of the charts. Of course, the black line is just the mean. But it's just interesting how close those statistics are reflected. And with African American women, of course, we're also looking at cardiovascular complications of obesity. And be aware that I'm with maternal, adolescent, and child health. If you look at birth outcomes, deformities in heart are related to obesity in the babies. So be careful. So how are we addressing this program? As I said, Los Angeles County received designation as one of the 8 pilot sites across the United States to study this, and we came together about 4 times every year and shared what we were doing and what we were learning and what the barriers were and how can we go from where we were. So Los Angeles and Boston and Salt Lake City did focus groups. I was just really lucky because focus groups are very expensive. And I'm just blessed with the fact that being in Los Angeles is a magnet for MPH students to come and work on with me. And obesity, of course, is a high interest topic. So I have about 7 MPH students all the time. So within Los Angeles, what we're doing is we are working on provider messaging, and we're going to talk about that. I'm so glad we have 20 minutes. We're working on consumer messaging is what I'm talking about today. And where are African-American women during the day and for most of the day? At work. Thank you. So we're also concentrating on how can we build a culture of worksite wellness. So worksite wellness is a big priority for us. We had, this is formative research, that you can't really draw anything but inferences from this. We had 2 sets of 11 focus groups, one set in 2007, and then we followed up with another round of focus groups in the summer of 2008. And what I'd like to talk about today are the very interesting insights that we receive from the talking to the women. And even though it may be expensive to do focus groups, you really have to do that. You can't assume that you know how to change behavior without talking to the people that you're trying to work with. So what did we find out with the African Americans? Well, first of all, just to give you a little demographic information about the people that we talked to, they were WIC. They were attending the WIC clinics within Los Angeles, high-risk areas. And they were between 22 to 33. Now, I spoke this morning, I'm doing 3 presentations on all this, and this morning I was comparing the Latinas. Was anyone here there this morning? No. Okay, good. So you're fresh. All right. What was really interesting, when you're looking at the Latinas that were attending the WIC clinics that we talked to in either English or Spanish, and the African American, if you look at them statistically, a third to 40% of the Latinas had not graduated high school. You look at the African Americans, and many of them had gone to college. So it was an entirely different woman as far as educational skills. Now, I'm just going to give you some rough overview of what was typical for these women. They don't use the parks. They don't go to the parks. They exercise very little, and I really think that this is one of the areas that we need to concentrate on, is how to motivate the women to exercise more. They don't cook. Their mothers, I heard it over and over again in the groups, their mothers worked 1 or 2 jobs. They may have cooked a little bit, but they weren't invited into the kitchen to cook. They were doing other things, and the mothers were so harassed and so tired that going for fast food was a treat. So at a very early age, they developed the taste for fast food. This is typical, typical. However, increasingly, they are dissatisfied with their weight. So I think some women are moving from pre-contemplation, where they are self-diagnosed as being overweight, but they're fine with it. They're totally okay with it. They're moving from pre-contemplation to contemplation that maybe the excess weight that they're carrying is a health risk for themselves, and maybe even as looking at it as a sort of a cultural shift, perhaps. They have access to grocery stores. Now, what we heard from the Latinas was, I have to get on the bus with bags of groceries to go. That's a real barrier, but it was not a barrier for African Americans. They had cars. And always it was constantly in all the groups, if we brought it up at all, they wanted inexpensive, healthy foods, fast foods. So, and they're seeing improvements. LA's doing a good job in improving safety as far as the perceptions of these women. It changed from 2007, where they were thinking that the neighborhoods were very unsafe, and that was their reason why they didn't use the parks. Okay. And they know the facts. They know good nutrition. They are taught well. They don't need any more nutrition information. Okay, so I've talked about education. The body image, unbelievably, I love this picture. If they're overweight, they love the way they look. If they're what's the normal weight according to the BMI, they are dissatisfied and unhappy and feeling like they're too skinny. And I want to talk about that in a minute. So they do perceive themselves as being overweight. However, increasingly, they are rating their health as being only fair, not excellent. They do not consider their health excellent or good. Increasingly, just fair. So we do know that they have a high knowledge of obesity. However, they had, in 2007, in the 11 focus groups, We quizzed them on what was healthy eating. They knew all the answers. There was no deficit in knowledge. However, there was just a string of excuses as to why they weren't acting on what they knew. They weren't exercising, but they knew they should. So what we found in 2007 was that overweight's acceptable and desired. This thing about the physicians, now this is very interesting because we've really been poking around this. We heard over and over again from overweight and even obese women that they had been told that they were overweight or obese before they got diabetes. But until they got diabetes, they didn't take the recommendations to do something about their weight seriously, especially if they had been told that they were overweight by a Caucasian. Now, I was fascinated by this, and one of the other things that they really didn't value or didn't give any credence to was the BMI chart. And what I have found out since 2007 to 2008, working with Dr. Yancey over at UCLA, is that they are on to something. They have reason to doubt a Caucasian doctor that is using the standard BMI chart to tell them that they're overweight or obese. Come to find out, your bones are heavier, the arms and the legs are longer, so I hate to use myself as a model, but if you're carrying your weight in your legs and your arms and in your bones and not around the organs midway, you're not increasing your risk of diabetes and cardiovascular disease and high blood pressure. Your weight is somewhere else other than in the area that is so dangerous. So if we need to promote a different BMI chart for African American women, we need to get on that, because it affects the credibility of the providers that are using the inappropriate tool if they're doing that. So work with me. This is all kind of new stuff. Let's see what we should be telling Kaiser, what we should be telling Blue Cross as an appropriate tool for judging overweight and obesity in African American women. We know all this. It's fast food number one is the number one barrier to eating healthy. What we found out in 2008, it's not safety, it's not lack of access, it is motivation that is the number one barrier to physical activity. And of course we need to accommodate childcare. And yes, people that behave healthy in a healthy way should get a break on their health insurance cost. And we need incentives, all that, but we mostly need to figure out how to motivate people to build a habit of having exercise. So, based on the 2007 data, we developed a little tool that we were going to use in 2008. I have teams of MPH students at Preceptor with me that conduct most of the focus groups. I attend a lot of them, but essentially they're manned by students. So the 2008 students were, of course, coming in with no experience from 2007 in what was learned or anything. So what we did was we framed the focus groups for 2008 in terms of let's test these messages. So the way that we worked this, and this worked out really well. This is focus grouped very positively, and I have this in English and in Spanish that any of you can use. Please use it and give me feedback on it. But essentially what I suggest is effective is go ahead and knowledge is so high, they know what they need to be doing. Just a yes or no, are you doing it? Are you drinking low-fat or 1% milk? Are you exercising at least 30 minutes every day? Yes or no? If it's a no, then that's an area that you really need to change in order, because these are the 10 evidence-based strategies for maintaining a healthy weight. So if you're doing these things, you're much more likely to have a healthy weight. So if it's a no, then work on it to change that behavior. And the rest of the brochure is about the barriers, giving suggestions to overcome the barriers that we heard were barriers in 2007, but which we really in 2008 heard fairly clearly these were excuses. But excuses, barriers, who cares? We want to somehow give some suggestions as to what they could do in order to do one of these things they know they should be doing but they're not doing. And it doesn't hurt to give them a little visual clue about the plate, and half of the plate is filled with vegetables, and you know, just simple stuff to remind them of what they already know. High cost of healthy food is not a barrier. And if taught simple recipes, 4 ingredients, 15 minutes prep time, women will cook, because it actually costs less to cook than it does to go and buy the unhealthy fast foods. But it needs to be done in a setting where you're building social support. I suggest the churches. And eat together, make it a time of bonding and storytelling and whatever. You're eating, you're cooking together, you're learning the recipes. This is the only way we're going to be able to improve the behaviors, because women are feeling isolated. They're feeling stressed. They're feeling totally disconnected. They're eating fast foods. They're not exercising. And they need much more than just a program in nutrition. They need a park program that they know about that they can go and learn how to cook. They need at their church a walking group, or every Wednesday night is going to be cooking together. We need to build a system that supports them. So in Los Angeles, I don't know, how many of you from California? Oh, okay. Well, in California, we have in Latino neighborhoods, we have vendors on the corners selling fresh produce, cheap, and they've cut up the pineapple and they have it in little wedges and they have wonderful fruit. Access is not a barrier. However, what we found out was you need to prevail, you need to go into the Latinos markets, you in the back that are in California. You need to have a little group, maybe church organized, and talk to the owner of the Latino market. You need to have some people hired there that look like you, so that whenever you're bringing your population into that Latino market, they feel welcome because they're not being utilized, but they're close to the low-income African-American pockets of and neighborhoods, but they're ignored, they're invisible. So I'm gonna flip on through this. All I want you to do is just be aware. Motivation is the big thing. Social support is what we've got to do. We're moving the needle. People are beginning to contemplate changing a weight. We've got to work with McDonald's, Taco Bell, get some fast food options that are cheap and inexpensive. And we got to focus on bringing people together, eating together, cooking together. All of this, of course, you know, is available on the web. And I'll be here with my card. I'll be happy to work with you. I work for the Department of Public Health in Los Angeles County. I am one person. The only way that we can be effective in Los Angeles is working between the department, community-based organizations, and churches, and people. We're just so tiny. But we certainly can do a lot together. So let's collaborate. Let's do something about this.